This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Time for the Bridge Zone, and we are going to be learning Spanish because we are off to Argentina. Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry, Mariana, Patrick, and Julie. We have three quarters of the New Zealand mixed team with us, but first off, shall we toss a coin? Judge Julie or Bailiff this week? Congratulations.
Oh, well, thank you. That's great, and there's six in the team, so we've got Liz and Blair as the third pair. We've got half the team here at the moment.
We'll do our question first.
My question is, Julie, and this happened during the trials, where, to me, the stakes were pretty high. It happens at clubs all around the country every week where somebody makes a mistake and they have a penalty card on the table, or they've led out a turn or whatever, and you call the director and, you know, they give you all of those options. You know what they're like. They go on and on. Now, some people sort of think it's not quite the right thing to take advantage of that. What is the ethical situation there, Julie?
Well, the thing about it is who's made the mistake, right? And what happens is you call the director, because it certainly isn't right to take advantage of something without calling the director and finding out what your options are. And you are not taking advantage of it. You didn't do anything. Your opponents did something wrong. In the process of doing something wrong, they may well have given their partner information that your partner is not entitled to have. And the laws are very much predicated on equity as much as they can, not penalty. And they are there to try and make sure that things continue correctly rather than someone getting an advantage that they don't have. And people make mistakes all the time. Now, some of the time, you know, you don't care. Some of the time when you don't care, the next thing that happens, you care very much about, because it's your disadvantage, not theirs. And you didn't do anything wrong. So when things go wrong, the director is called and it's there to put things back to normal. So you're not the person who has done anything wrong here, and you are fully entitled to take advantage of your options. I think Patrick will probably have something to say as well. There you go.
What do you think, Patrick?
Yes, I would like to weigh in on this particular issue, because quite often it is a penalty. I know the laws always stress on getting back to at least equity, but often it is a penalty. But you think about the other games that are played, not bridge. When someone does something where there's a penalty, you don't tell their opponent they should be waiving their penalty. If you took your kid along to play rugby and one of the opponents knocked the ball on, you wouldn't be shouting out to tell the ref, oh, don't penalise them for that. Don't give our team a scrum because they didn't mean to knock the ball on. So use the kids' game, because if I said it was the All Blacks, you'd be saying, well, that's a more serious game. But it should be the same for everything. If something happens where they've committed an infraction, they should pay the penalty for that. So if someone serves at tennis and it's a cracking ace, but the guy calls out football because they put their foot over the line, you wouldn't say, oh, no, that it was great to serve, have the point. You wouldn't say that. So why do we say that at Drew? I personally don't understand. The worst thing, and I've been on the receiving end of this, is 1 year at the National Congress, the New Zealand Bulletin praised someone who didn't call the director when the opponents, who were a lower-ranking pair, praised them for not calling the director to have the revoked penalty. What I then got was, another player came to me and said how upset they were because they called the director about the opponent to vote. And then when the director had left, the opponents had said how mean they were because these other people had let someone off the revoke. So they must be really mean to call the director and have that revoke penalty enforced. I mean, you don't see what happens down the track. You don't praise someone for not taking advantage of the opponent's infraction. And if they've done something wrong, well, that's the rules of the game. I would expect someone to take advantage of me if I made a mistake. So why shouldn't I take advantage of them if they make a mistake?
Am I right, Barry? You thought you said you didn't want to feel guilty of taking it? When is that ever going to be a thing that you'd love taking it, wouldn't you? Taking advantage? You would not feel guilty of one little iota.
Can we all agree before we start that Barry is guilty? Full stop.
I can tell you that when I become President of the World Bridge Federation, things are going to change. This is what's going to happen, right? I reckon that when somebody makes a mistake, that's going to be it. If somebody bid hearts when they had spades, too bad. They won't get it back. There'll be no inadvertent law. That'll be gone, and you'll just have to live with it. Life will be much easier for the directors. They won't have to decide what they meant to do. That's what's going to happen. Look out.
There are rules about that. That can be a tricky one to enforce.
Actually, hang on. Sorry. I just thought I saw a pig fly past my window.
Yes, I know the feeling. President of the WBF.
Talking about getting all of our team here, it's a shame we don't have Blair on, because Blair could be the bailiff's enforcer.
I got some interesting stats from the weekend, by the way. I don't know whether you guys noticed it. It seemed to be a hell of a lot of games and slams in just about every one. So I had a quick buzz through, and in the quarterfinal, out of the 56 boards, 37 of them were played in game or slam. That's 66%, which wow. Seems a bit high to me.
Yeah.
But that was nothing compared to the semi-final, where 44 out of 56 were played in game. They weren't all making, by the way, Mariana, I'll just point out. But we were still winning them. In the final, it was 48 out of 56 were in slam. I thought that was amazing. That's 85% of the boards.
In slam or game?
Game or slam, game or slam.
It does seem hot, but also the incentive for bidding games at IMPs. So you'd expect it to be higher than normal at IMPs, because it certainly pays a bit of honourable game. You win more when it makes than you lose when it doesn't make. If you only made 40% of your vulnerable game, you'd be ahead. Let's say your opponents never bid them, and you always bid them, and you only made 40% of your vulnerable games, you'd win. So it does pay to be aggressive on vulnerable games and imps. But I would have thought that more than half the deals are played in a game anyway. So I agree. It does seem that it was some volatile sets. With more than you expect, but not hugely so.
There was an awful lot of bidding on some of those games now that we're talking about it. But my favourite bidding was, how do you open your one club, Patrick? What's the description of your one club?
It's 15 plus. Okay. When past hand, so it's gone past one club, it's 18.
Okay. So there was lengthy bidding. So I watched all day yesterday. It was great. My favourite bidding by you two was one club, four hearts, six clubs. I thought, wow, that was an awesome bid. Whoa.
Well, I think I should have bid seven clubs on my hand. So I actually expected that to be a loss. So that was one game very lucky for us. I was really surprised to come back and find that we'd gained 12 imps because the opponents were only in game. I was really depressed about that board, thinking I really should have bid seven. But anyway.
It's hard sitting at the table and you know what could have happened and you're thinking, because it is so tight and everything can change so quickly, even if you feel like you've got a bit of a head start, it can fall apart incredibly quickly sometimes. So missing anything is just, you know, oh, is that a minus? Yeah. But you've got to put it behind you and keep going.
I was going to say your favourite board was the one where Julie was describing her hand. She had seven spades and two hearts and one diamond and three clubs. And she described her hand with a lot of complicated bidding with seven spades and two hearts and one diamond and three clubs. And then she saw me bid five diamonds and she had to pass because I was selecting the contract and thought for sure that I'd stuffed
it. They were in six diamonds. Is that correct? Jenny led the ace of hearts and Barry had the ace of doubleton.
Right. I was very happy to see Jenny lead the ace of hearts because I had the ace of trumps.
Yeah, I saw that one. I thought, wow, that's a good lead. Yeah. And I was like, go on, lead it.
The joys of complex systems, right, are that if you make a mistake, you can't easily get out of it because of what you're showing. So when Patrick bid five diamonds, I looked very carefully at what I had shown to make sure I hadn't made the mistake. And I thought, well, you know, it is what it is. It's not me.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm just trying to analyse Mariana's comment. She said she watched all weekend and she said an awful lot of bidding. What did she mean by that? Did she mean a lot of awful bidding, or did she mean...
No, I watched all day Monday, because on Saturday we were up in Auckland and I thought, I could swing by, but we didn't have enough time for me to pop in. We were up there doing a surprise 65th and 66th birthday. It was pretty cool.
The other thing I would say was that it was very pleasant. Although it was interesting, because it's a lot of boards against one team. We played 56 boards and four lots of 14 against every one team on each of the 3 days. The people that we played were all good. It was comfortable. It wasn't argumentative, it was just very well played. The atmosphere was good and everyone was polite to everybody. And I'm sure there were a few people that were upset about the way things went, because certainly you can have bad luck and good luck as well. But it was really well done and it was very pleasant. So it was really
good. Who was the director for the event, Julie?
Murray Wiggins. Murray and Carolyn were both
there. And can you tell me the reason why you guys played the finals at the bowling club?
Yeah, because the club was in use. The Bridge Club rooms are in use.
Ah, right, yeah.
All right, okay. So there's room at the bowling club, so that's why. And I mean, Barry Palmer and Jonathan, who's chef de mission, but Barry, who volunteered his time both weekends, did an incredible amount of work with getting the screens up, moving them around. It was just phenomenal. And to anyone who wants, I mean, Barry Palmer, you want one at home. He did an amazing job looking after us and cleaning and running around. So not so sure about a Barry Jones, but there you go.
At one point, Mariana, I heard her say that she wanted a Barry at home, and I thought, well, you know, and I realised it wasn't me.
Like, no, not me.
No one wants it.
Okay, so in terms of seeding, Barry told me about the seedings. It's a dicey game that we play. So just seedings, is it actually worthwhile seedings? Why don't you just pull them out of a hat?
We'll let Patrick go with that one, shall we?
I don't want to talk about this event and the draw that they organise, but the seeding for the tournaments, for your average regular tournament, the idea is that you should organise it so that everyone has about the same difficulty of playing. So most of our tournaments are pairs events. So if you played a pairs event, you wouldn't want to have the best eight pairs all sitting north-south, or maybe one of the top pairs sitting east-west and all the other good pairs sitting north-south. Because then you'd find that one good pair that's sitting east-west would probably win quite easily, because the scores they're comparing with are not such a tough field. So they're probably going to win their direction with 65 to nobody else scoring, whereas the people sitting in the other direction are all going to be fighting for the match points, and you know one of them will win with 56 or 57. So you want to, A, organise it so that each group is equally strong, and you want to organise that the pairs they play against are a reasonable selection as well. So it is important for the way we play the game that you should make an effort to try and seed the field so that everyone has a fair show.
And that was the weekend. I mean, at the end of the day, you've got to be able to beat everyone you play. So the seeding isn't critical. I don't know that the seeding was entirely critical, though there were some bits about it that might have been but weren't on the days, as it turned out.
The game at the weekend was knockout. And the sport that has the most obvious knockout is tennis. And you wouldn't be seeding. You might have retired now. You Federer to play Djokovic in the first round, would you?
So that removes you and Julie from the senior selection list?
Yep. Absolutely. Can't be in two teams at the same time.
Yeah.
Though Patrick might like to be able to play that much bridge, because he really does love sitting down and playing.
Okay. So what's the next thing that you guys have to do? So you've selected your other pair, Blair and Liz. What's next?
I believe we've got a non-playing captain appointed.
Yep. Same as Morocco?
No. I don't know whether we're allowed to say this yet, so we better not. But they have appointed non-playing captain, so that'll be announced later probably. NZ Bridge do that. So I guess we'll perhaps get some communication from that person.
And we should get some practice. is the idea. So hopefully we play well when we go overseas.
A long time away, really.
It goes very fast.
Yeah, it does. Awesome.
So
what
else? A good steak bar somewhere in Buenos Aires, apparently.
I think I'm very interested in things to do is finding restaurants.
It's Spanish speaking over there, isn't it? Is your Spanish rusty or non-existent?
Pretty non-existent.
See? No, that doesn't work.
Hola. Unfortunately, the language at the table is English.
Yeah.
You'll be pleased to know, guys, Jenny has changed her Duolingo from French to Spanish. She's going to do that. Maybe she can order for us at the steakhouse.
That's a thought.
You can do that, can't you? Yes. Let's say for teams, what's your next teams event then? Are you going to New Plymouth?
No.
No, we're not.
Now, in last week's show, we asked people what qualifications you would need to be a caddy at the Gold Coast Congress. And we were going to talk about it this week.
Tell
us about that.
Apparently, Mariana, so I heard that Patrick and Julie weren't playing the last event and they offered their services as caddies for the finals of the teams. And, their application wasn't accepted, Mariana. Apparently, maybe not experienced enough, maybe not used to moving boards around. I'm not sure the reason. They were underqualified, Mariana.
We'll clarify that.
We'll clarify it
a little bit, shall we?
Because
they had a day where, apart from the fact that they already had people that had to go home for various family and other reasons, they then had a second floor manager that disappeared on the Friday. And we were playing the side event that finished on the Friday and finished earlier than the Ivy Dala Swish, which had more rounds. We had flown out by the time it got to the final of the teams. So we said to Laurie that we would be happy to do what we could, which was mainly caddying, because there wasn't much else we could do because it is really well organised and well run. And Laurie decided he didn't need us. So that was good because we just wandered home and had a lovely, relaxing evening before we came back to New Zealand. There you go. We're always wandered, aren't we, Patrick?
He's got no comment. He's not saying a word. Oh, and Barry's gone. I'm excited about you guys going. That was awesome. Just to close, what was your favourite board of the finals, just the finals?
Well, I'd say there was one board where I took a good decision to bid slam, I think, and wasn't bid in the other room. And Julie played it well to make it. When I bid it, I knew it was definitely at least 50%. Couldn't be worse. It might be better. And Julie made a nice play. She had a singleton spade and dummy opposite king to four spades in her own hand. Really, it was a 50% chance that the ace was onside. When she let the spade off dummy and the hand in front didn't play the ace, which it would be very hard to duck the ace if you had it.
It was a simple spade and dummy.
By playing small and then coming to her hand twice, to rough twice, and the ace of spades was offside, but there was only three cards offside. So she was able to rough the ace down and make the slam that way. So perhaps it was one where I bid it fairly well and Julie played it.
That's good.
Crucial because we gained 13 rather than losing 13. So,
I think there was a hand that I was looking at. I think it was the last hand of stanza either two or three, Patrick. And did you take a dive in four hearts?
I put four hearts over their transfer to put them under pressure to decide what to do. And Julie had a very unhappy hand for me. I had two singletons and she had the king in both singletons, so that it was absolutely no use to me. And it was also made it more difficult for them to make their game, so it was less likely to be a good sacrifice. I had six hearts and five diamonds, and she only had one heart. And worse than that, the diamonds broke badly, so they could take two roughs and diamonds. So, yes, that was 14 amps out.
Yeah, and I looked at that and I was like, wow, thank God, because it was going further and then it would go squeeze back in that you were tighter and then it went again. And I was like, but there were a lot of swings, weren't there?
That is the nature of things. There always are a lot of swings.
Sometimes six spades opposed to four no trumps where they went looking and Barry put Jenny into six spades with a singleton spade.
There's decisions that you make, and some are good and some are bad. Some are lucky and some are unlucky.
Yeah.
Right? And others, like Patrick, I just thought, thank goodness I'm not playing this hand because it's going to be horrible. And, I mean, sometimes if you're aggressive, it works, and every now and then it costs you a bit. So looking at your decisions...
It would have been 14 himself and it was 16 himself, so because I went next to one off that I shouldn't have got. But there you go.
And you don't know what the scores are, is that right? You don't have a running total.
We find out every morning board.
Yeah.
You actually have some sort of idea whether good things or bad things have happened in your take.
Yeah. So, Buenos Aires, here we go.
The hand you commented on went one club, four hearts, six clubs. And I was gutted about it not bidding seven.
Yeah.
12 in, and I thought it was probably 13 out.
Really?
I seriously thought that they might well be grand in the other room, but they didn't even bid slam. I was sort of like hoping they were only in slam, but then I was probably 13 out. And turned out, I actually never inquired what happened in the other room, but they obviously had some sort of slight misunderstanding. That
they had a harder option with natural bidding. I knew Patrick had 15 plus points, so I didn't know what he had. So when they intervened four hearts over me, I knew there was a pretty good chance that we had slam and that we probably had enough control. So even though I didn't know we were making it, I thought that it was a good enough chance that I would bid it. In the other room where they opened a natural bid and they got a four heart intervention, a lot harder for them to have found the six clubs. And that's the problem. You always think your opponents, and this happens at the table at club, you always think your opponents will do better than you, or that they can see the cards better than you and those things. And if you just play to do what you can be really surprised at the results you get.
No, it was pretty good. Tell me, who were doing the view graph?
Lissandra, most of the time for the table we were at, though, and Jeremy Hoskin-Fraser at the other table, as well as Anne Somerville in the afternoon.
Well done, everybody, because that's really good.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, makes you enjoy the game. It took ages, and I thought, wow, four times 14 boards takes a while.
It's much slower.
Centuries.
I must admit, that's the thing I don't like. It's much slower.
Well, like I said, congratulations. Take care. See you, Jules. Thanks.
Okay.
Banish. Not your strong point?
No, not my strong point, but Jenny's doing Duolingo.
And Patrick says, no, it's not his strong point. I guess you'll be all downloading that app.
Does Patrick have a strong point?
Was there any tip that you use? Obviously, you were like Zia. You were on, how he's got his three heats, where everything you touch is gold, and then, okay, you're playing all right, and then the bottom heat is should have stayed home in bed. So things were in heat three?
I wouldn't say that. We just kept on. Those stats I talked about earlier, there was just so many games. It was like every hand was another game, and which, of course, means that the pressure is really constant, because when you're playing teams, although every hand counts, when somebody stops at a part score, you too tend to relax a little bit and think, oh, well, they get 140 or 110 or who cares? Well, you don't quite think that, but you certainly relax. But when you're getting a set of 14 boards where there's 13 games on, there's no relaxing going on. You've got to try and beat every game. You've got to try and make every one of yours.
Well, of course, on ViewGraph, we get to see all the hands, and you look at it and you think, right, this is where that hand's going. And then the next minute, all hell breaks loose. It's not the same. Imagine trying, when you're only having to deal with yours and trying to work it out. And we were talking about Judge Dooley and Bailiffs. It was one club, four hearts, six clubs. I think on your one...
I didn't quite understand that option, Mariana. So somebody opened one club.
Patrick opened one club.
And did somebody overcall four hearts?
Overcalled four hearts. So one club, overcall four hearts, and Dooley banged in six clubs. Now, on your auction, I think it went one club, and Jenny only bid three hearts, and then that's why they bid four spades. And then it was pass, pass, pass.
It's a big difference when somebody opens a strong club these days, particularly if you're not vulnerable, and they've opened a club, and all it says is, I've got 16 points and doesn't say anything about their suits or their shape or anything.
Yeah.
The top level players know that they need to get in there and bid as high as they dare, as quick as they can, to take up as much space as they can from the people who still haven't had a chance of describing their hand. How do you think the person felt who'd opened one club with this really good hand and then it goes four hearts on his left, six clubs from his partner, back to him, and he hasn't said anything about his hand yet? And we're already up to the sixth level. That's what happens in those sort of situations. And I think it's because we've all seen back in the old days when somebody opened a precision club, everybody sat back and watched them bid. But nowadays, people have realised you're better off to get in there, make life difficult, you know, take up as much space as you dare, because it tends to work.
Doesn't always. Try that tomorrow night.
We're only talking about people who open a strong club system. It doesn't come up that much, but people have all sorts of systems where they bid all sorts of things over it just to get in there and disrupt the auction.
We're now recording at night. I see that the conclusion of all the mixed team trials has been put up by NZ Bridge, and your captain is Peter Newell.
We have, and we got a nice email from him tonight to all the team members. That was good, and he seems happy to be the captain and looking forward to it. Should be quite a compatible team, you would hope, and all sort of stable, experienced partnerships. Hopefully that might make his job a little bit easier. This event that we're playing in, it used to be called the Olympiad, but it's now called the World Mind Games. It's a bit different to the other major events, you know, we play in, because this any country can enter a team. There's no pre-qualifying needed, like the Bermuda Bowl. So as a result, there are often a large number of countries that send teams. And so while there are many very strong teams, there are also a lot more weaker teams than in a Bermuda Bowl.
Okay.
They held every 4 years. They didn't hold one in 2020 for obvious reasons, for COVID. There hasn't actually been one since 2012. Yeah. It didn't actually have the mixed team category. But in 2012, there were 60 open teams, 43 women's teams, and 34 seniors teams. You know, that's a lot more than we had in Morocco.
It's going to be pretty big then.
It will be. What have we got coming up in the weekend, Mariana? Is it the Taranaki Congress this weekend?
It is.
And what are the entries looking like? Have you had a look?
They look okay. 23 pairs in the intermediate 21, junior.
21 tables in the open pairs.
Yeah, in the intermediate junior teams, there's only six registered.
22 teams in the open. Our teamies are going down for the pairs, Blair and Liz Fisher, so we'll check up on them. That's keen for you, Mariana.
I'm surprised you're not going down to get a whiteback fritter.
I'm afraid we're having a weekend off.
Well, take care and congratulations.
Thanks, Mariana, and we'll see what we've got to report from the Taranaki Congress next week.
It's been a pretty exciting week. Catch you later.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring Bridge from beginner to international, nationwide.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.